it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
What's up, everybody? Welcome in to another episode of the PHNX Suns podcast. I'm Lindsay, that's Saul, that's Gerald, and that's Espo. It's really weird how much color is happening on this set today, all things considered of how we normally are. Like, I have orange pants on, you have red pants and teal shoes, bright green shirt. The only one who's normal here is Espo.
I had a test pattern of, I don't know if you could see it on screen.
But you can't really see it.
It's kind of splatter paint here.
It's a lot. I'm usually all in black. It's weird.
Saul's teal shoes are probably the highlight of the whole ensemble.
Yeah, look at us being so colorful on this Wednesday afternoon.
I mean, to be fair, I'm always colorful, so.
Sure.
Is it all right if I say half?
Compared to you guys?
I thought you were meaning colorful and like.
At least you didn't get the joke.
I didn't get the joke.
It's fine.
Language, too. I mean, it works.
It's true. It's true.
All right, guys. Let's talk about big three, shall we?
I guess.
Sure.
If we have to.
Do they work? Do they not work? Mm-hmm. Did we have fun? Did we not have fun? I guess it all depends on which big three we're talking about here. So we're going to dive into a couple here and look at some that have worked in the past, some that have not worked in the past. Just a little disclaimer, we are going to kind of cherry pick a few of these here, mostly focusing on big threes that were built, not grown, because that's what the Suns are. Okay, so it just kind of makes a little bit of sense here. So we'll go ahead and start with big threes that have worked in the past. Things we can look at as an example that maybe the Suns should be trying to emulate or follow in their footsteps of. We'll start with a Boston big three here. So this is their first season together, the 2007-2008 team with Ray Allen, Kevin Garnett, and Paul Pierce, right? So their record, 66-16, finished first in the East, and their end result, they won a finals. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think was a contributing factor to them being so successful in their first year together?
Well, there was multiple different reasons. First, all three of them had different styles of play. Obviously, and at different positions, right? So you had a surefire shooting guard in Ray Allen. Then Paul Pierce was the small forward. Paul Pierce was a decent outside shooter, but he had a good all-around game as well. And then you had Kevin Garnett, who, you know, manned down low and was obviously the heart and soul of that team. But the most important part is you did have a connector with that team that is not shown as the big three in Rajon Rondo, who really brought those guys together, could facilitate at a high level and help. You know, he's kind of the glue of that team in terms of, you know, making sure everybody got touches and was able to perform at a high level. That thing just clicked from day one. I think they started off the season like 32-4 that year. Mm-hmm. Like they were insane. And so that kind of was the blueprint of what a big three should be. And then everybody tried to replicate it and, you know, you had mixed results.
Yeah, I think there are a couple of things that I look at with the Celtics that I'm going to point to a couple of times when we're talking about these big threes that worked. But the first thing that stands out, they were the number one defense in the NBA. Like Saul mentioned, they had complementary pieces on the offensive end, but defensively, they were also very locked in. KG won Defensive Player of the Year that year, so that always helps. There's also the fact that when you look at this team, like in terms of what they had to give up to get KG and Ray Allen, like, oh, this is interesting to me, but back then when you were trading for these franchise type players, and yes, because KG and Ray Allen were a little bit older, maybe their value wasn't quite as much, but they didn't have to give up this bevy of players and picks. Like it back then it was either like pick heavy or player heavy in terms of what you were giving up. Like they gave up Al Jefferson, Ryan Gomes, Sebastian Telfair, Gerald Green, Theo Ratliff, cash, and two first round picks for KG. Like, would you compare that to what we gave up for Kevin Durant? Mm-hmm. it's a lot different in terms of what you're left with to rebuild your franchise. Ray Allen was for, they got Ray Allen and Glenn Davis for Delonte West, Wally Szczerbiak, and the fifth overall pick who became Jeff Green. So like, not the same type of value. And then the last thing, like, this is the one bit of hope when we're looking at these big threes that worked. In terms of age, KG was 31 when he got traded to the Celtics. Ray Allen was 33. Paul Pierce was 30. But most of these other big threes we're going to look at were not put together so late in these guys'
careers. They were more so in their prime, these other big threes that worked out.
The other big thing, too, is, like, Kevin Garnett. Like, I don't think enough can be said about, like, we talked about emotion yesterday and, like, just effort. Mm-hmm. Like, Kevin Garnett demanded that you play it at a high level around that team. You know, he was very demonstrative. He would talk trash to anybody, still does to this day, even though he doesn't play. Like, he was the soul of that team and made sure everybody was held accountable and playing at a high level. And so, you know, when you look at this team, you know, we don't really have that guy that's as demonstrative as Kevin Garnett, that is holding guys accountable and is not afraid to get in not only his teammates' face, but obviously the opposition's face. And that, I think that's the probably the glaring difference between those guys.
They had youth, too. I mean, this was not a team that was just top-heavy and then didn't have anybody. They had 13 guys that played 10-plus minutes a game in the regular season. I mean, they had – sure, they had Rajon Rondo. They also had Sam Cassell on that team as a veteran floor leader. You look at it and, you know, they have Kendrick Perkins backed up by Big Baby Davis. So they have two strong centers there. Like, this was more of a team when you look at the roster, not just three guys. And to be fair, Ray Allen, Paul Pierce, and Kevin Garnett, when they all showed up there, were all bona fide Hall of Famers, right? Devin maybe gets there. Brad, who knows, at some point. KD is really the only guy here that is that bona fide top-level superstar, you know, Hall of Fame lock. Where with the Celtics, all three of those guys were next level in most people's eyes. So I think that's a little bit different here, too.
Go ahead.
And it didn't feel like any one of them had to take necessarily a back seat to the other. They all found a way to, like, groove with each other. And they were, and despite their age, like, they were still playing at a very high level at that moment. And Ray Allen continued to for about four or five more years, even with the Miami Heat afterwards, which salted that whole trio of relationship. But, you know, we'll get to that another day. So, like, they found a way for it to work. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, when you look at them versus what we were trying to do, like, we were just going through it, trying to figure out how these three were going to be able to work together. It just never looked seamless as they made it.
Yeah. I feel like the Suns just kind of are missing a couple key pieces that you can see in this big three. Like, their defense was on another level compared to the Suns. And that's not to say the Suns were terrible. They were, what, 13th this year, Gerald? Mm-hmm. It's not terrible for a group of guys who, quote unquote, don't play defense, according to half of the internet. You know what I mean?
Right.
But they were also a top 10 offense. They had and then the youth and the really deep bench. Like, you can't look at the Suns this past season and say, hey, they had a really deep bench. Mm-hmm. You just can't.
And I think last thing, availability.
Like, yeah.
You look at it, Ray Allen played 73 games. Paul Pierce played 71. KG played 80 of 82 games. That's a huge difference compared to what we got out of Beal and Book, especially this year.
And it worked out well because they won a championship. But in their second season together, their record was 62-20. They finished second in the East, and they lost in the semis. So not as successful of a second season, but still pretty decent outing.
What is that, 124-40? Yeah. Did that math right?
It's not bad.
I'd take that.
Right?
I'd take any of that as long as it came with a championship in a 2-year span.
Could the Suns even get to that without winning like 75 games this year? I mean, this team was built the right way in a time in the NBA that I think you could go this method, still fill your roster out and be able to figure out. The most impressive thing was they overcame the fact that Doc Rivers was their head coach and still figured out how to win a title.
Ouch.
Damn.
All right, next big three we're going to look at is the 2010-2011 Miami Heat big three with LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh. So in their first season together, they had a 58-24 record. They finished second in the East. And the end result, they lost in the finals. Now, as we mentioned, one of the biggest differences here between this Big Three and the Boston Big Three we just spoke about was the age of the Big Three. Mm-hmm. These guys were all in their prime, mm-hmm. and they teamed up and said, hey, let's go build a super team.
Yeah. I mean, 26, 29, and 26 for those three. Like, they were in the midst of their prime, and they were able to build it. Yes, those teams had to give up, or they got something in return through sign-in trades, but it was like one or two first-round picks. They didn't gut their roster because those guys were choosing to go there in free agency, and they were able to get their team something, some type of compensation. So that end is a little bit different. And again, the one thing that jumps out, they were top five defense. They were fifth in the NBA in defensive rating. So again, you have guys that are meshing on both ends that are playing different roles, different positions, but also putting in the work defensively too.
Yeah, but again, like we talk about common themes, like they also had a connector. Mm-hmm. Udonis Haslam, if you ask any NBA player, if you ask EJ, like he'll go on and on about Udonis Haslam and his leadership from like day one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to keep guys accountable on and off the court, like you have to have those kind of people in your organization. And Udonis Haslam was one of those guys. They had also had a very good supporting cast. Mario Chalmers came off the bench. You had Birdman that was playing defense, rebounding a high level. Mike Miller was a nice catch and shoot three-point option. Like, they had a lot of role players that really fit around what they were trying to do with those other three. LeBron, being a point forward as he always has been his entire career, could help facilitate and also dominate scoring wise. Like, he was playing at his highest level around that time. So they were a very unusual team because of how they were crafted together, because we'd never really seen it that, you know, a superstar LeBron like LeBron has never really left an organization as early as he did from Cleveland to go to another team. Like, it just didn't happen at that point in the NBA. And so it was pretty historical. They flopped out against the Mavs and Dirk Nowitzki and Jason Kidd. Mm-hmm. And they only won two out of the 4 years that LeBron was there, which to me is probably one of the more, you know, not disappointing, but probably it was a letdown that they only won 2 out of 4. You expected a lot more from that team.
So many people feel that way. But again, if you told me I got 2 out of 4, I'd be so freaking stoked.
Yeah, if they said right now you're going to win 2 of the next 3 and you get 2 out of 4 in the time of this group, I would take it in a heartbeat,
my
obviously.
Goodness.
But I get what you're saying, because there's probably 3 of the best young guys that were ever put together in a group. I think compared to the Celtics, this roster top to bottom is significantly worse than what Boston had at times in that group in this iteration. The next iteration that we'll go over, they had a little bit more. But I look at this, and the biggest thing to me, outside of those three pieces making more sense like they did in Boston with having specific roles, is sacrifice. Chris mm-hmm. Bosh sacrificed a lot of his game offensively in Miami, right? Because he was the guy in Toronto and went into Miami, and I think was willing to make that sacrifice that we heard, I believe it was James Jones, talk about last week in the press conference, that some of these big three, they need to sacrifice. Chris Bosh was a prime example of that. I'm not sure if it was sacrifice as much as getting put in odd positions for the group this year, asking Brad and Devin Booker to be point guards was just an odd fit, where Chris Bosh just said, I'm going to focus on the other things other than scoring.
I think you can also look at that team too and clearly point out solid leadership mm-hmm. and some grit, like mm-hmm. that dog type mentality you were talking about with the Celtics as well in the first example here. Those are two things that were very... we were unsure of mm-hmm. all season.
And also, like, that was the first season of Eric Spoelstra with the Miami Heat. Was that mm-hmm. trio right there. That was the first season. They did their training camp at Herbert Field Air Force Base in Florida because they wanted to set this, like, you know, this grind mentality, and they wanted to surround themselves with an environment that kind of reflected, like, you got to put in the work in order to you know, really reach a high level. And I just remember that because I had a bunch of friends that were still out there, because I used to be stationed out there, and they were just like, this is crazy. Like, this mm-hmm. is something we've never ever seen before. So it's pretty cool. You know, obviously the next 2 years they ended up winning championships, but you know, it was pretty cool to see.
Yeah, I think one thing that we take for granted too is Pat Riley in that whole equation controls that entire thing with an iron fist, because the big three wanted Spo out. They wanted Pat Riley to step back in that seat and coach that team. And Riley said, no, we're not doing that. Eric Spoelstra is our coach. You'll respect that. I don't know that there's a voice like that in the entire Suns organization that would say that to any of the three members of the roster, here and be that definitive and take charge like that with the star power. And you never questioned who was in charge in Miami. If Pat Riley said it, that was what was happening. And if you didn't like it, much like Jimmy Butler might find out, you ain't gonna be around for very long. So
we looked at the first season of this big three together. The second season of this big three together, the record was 46-20. They finished second in the East and they won finals. So quite a few finals appearances, couple championships.
Am I missing something here?
No biggie.
What?
It was the short season. I was like, wait, what? Yeah. Okay, gotcha. Yeah,
that was the one that started in January, or December.
All right, the next big three, the Golden State Warriors. Their 2016-2017 season, you had Steph Curry, you had Klay Thompson, and of course, Kevin Durant. So they finished with a 67-15 record. They finished first in the West, and they won the championship.
Yeah, this isn't even a fair comparison because you had a big three there that was already naturally built with Steph, Draymond, and Klay, and then you throw Kevin Durant in, and it's like, come on, like that's just wasn't fair. That was playing dirty pool right there. That was just not fair to the entire league. And anybody that thought the Suns would even breathe that rarefied air was kidding themselves. I mean, you could have kept everybody that you wound up sending out for KD and brought in Bradley Beal, and I don't think you're that team anyways.
It was such a unique team. Like, again, you're talking about leadership. You did have leadership in multiple different ways, and that was probably the first team that had leadership in three different areas in three different ways. Like, you had Steve Kerr as the coach, you know, obviously he had won, it felt like, a million titles with the Bulls and the Spurs. And so he had that pedigree in that background. And then you have Steph Curry, who's more of like a subtle, mild-mannered kind of leader in terms of how he approaches guys on the court and off the court. He's not very demonstrative. And then you had Draymond Green, who was the exact opposite, very demonstrative, who will get in your face. We saw him go at KD a couple times during their tenure there. And it was very wild to see a team that won 73 games the year before, and then, yeah, they lost in the finals, mostly because Draymond Green ended up kicking LeBron in the nuts and getting suspended, which completely killed their chances. But also think about that supporting cast. Like, that's a theme here. You had Andre Iguodala, you had Livingston, who played point guard as good as anybody else could in a complimentary role. Like, you had a lot of good players on those teams that were able to do their job. You had Bogut down low as well, that helped out. Like, you just had a lot of good players that were able to help facilitate to the big three and get them everything they want. And it was the perfect situation for Kevin Durant, because all he says is, I want to do is play ball. Mm-hmm. That was the very perfect situation, because that's literally all they asked him to do, was just play ball. We'll take care of the rest. And you saw the results.
Yeah. And again, I'm going to continue pointing to these three factors, like the defensive end. They were the number two defense in the league that year. How much did they have to give up? They signed him as an unrestricted free agent. And yes, they had to trade away Harrison Barnes and I think Andrew Bogut in order to free up the room to bring him on. But you're not giving up, your whole future of first round picks in order to make this work. And then age. Steph Curry was 28, KD was 28, Klay was 26, Draymond was 26, all like in the midst of their peak, their prime.
Isn't what the Suns have at all. You got one there, right? And you brought up bench, you brought up the coach, right? That's not here. Like, there's no doubt that Steve Kerr had command of that room, because they knew he had five rings as a player and already had one as a coach at that point. Like, they knew he was the guy that was going to be the voice on the bench and set the culture. Mm-hmm. They knew who their locker room leaders were, and then they were deep. And again, these are the fatal flaws we keep coming back to with the Suns. They don't have any of those there, which caused a lot of the issues this year.
Mm-hmm. I also feel like organizationally, like all three teams, the Celtics, the Heat, and the Warriors, did not feel like they were struggling to find their identity. Mm-hmm. Like even with the big three in Boston that first year, you knew that like they were gonna give you the business every single game. Like that was not a doubt. Mm-hmm. They played physical. They played tough. Pat Riley's group, obviously, that's without question. And then you go to the Warriors, and they very much were that run and gun, kind of taking where the Suns 7 seconds or less, left off, and they took it to a whole nother level. They were all about shooting the deep threes and just murdering you from every single aspect of the game possible. There was not really much you could do to stop them.
Okay, I have a question for you guys about identity. Do you think it comes from the organization, like you hear about Heat culture, right? That's an organizational kind of identity to an extent. Or do you think it comes more from the top players on your team? Or is it a mix of the two?
I personally think it comes from the executive level. Mm-hmm. I do believe in like a GM or a president of basketball operations, hell, even the owner for in some cases, where they have this identity and this thought of the type of player they want to bring in, the type of DNA they want in their players, and what they identify in terms of their system that they think is going to be good fits. And that's why sometimes, when a team like the Spurs takes a Kawhi Leonard, you don't really blink twice because Pop is such a culture there. You're like, okay, well, that's a risk. I don't even know who this Kawhi Leonard guy is. And then he ends up being like one of the greatest players of all time, like because they have a culture. They know what they're looking for. They know how to identify it, and they keep going on with it. That's what the Suns are trying to find right now.
I think it kind of depends on the situation, because I think there are places like the Heat, even the Spurs, to a level where that executive head coach consistency of like, we know what to expect from those two positions year in and year out of what we're trying to build. I think that does help for sure. But there are some teams that, it takes time to build that sort of thing. And for a team like the Suns right now, who have had so many transitions over the last couple of years in terms of head coaches, front office roles, owner, pretty much everybody outside of Devin Booker, like that sort of thing takes time to build. And I think you can build it quickly, but you have to bring it. It all has to kind of come together in this collective way that we didn't really see this year, whether we're talking about Frank Vogel, the players they brought in, the all new coaching staff. Like that was a lot of moving parts to try to jam together in one year.
Some organizations just have, like the Celtics, what the Celtic mindset is. And that came from Red Auerbach, in their infancy, mm-hmm. and kind of set that tone with it. Miami has had it for 20 plus, or almost 30 years now, since Pat Riley has been there. The Spurs are the same way because Pop's been there since the late 90s. I think you can build it that way, but more often than not, in the way that the NBA tends to be a transient league, I think your players wind up determining it in a lot of cases, or your head coach. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know that it's always executives. I think it's one of those two things. And look at Denver. There's not a huge history of what that franchise is, but Mike Malone came in Nikola Jokic came in. And they very much defined who that team is and what they are. And very much they take after Jokic, their main guy. Like, mm-hmm. they've taken on a lot of his personality and Malone's personality. Again, if, this team didn't reflect Devin Booker, this team didn't, maybe they reflected Frank Vogel and kind of a laissez-faire attitude, and maybe that's part of it. But you can't microwave culture, I don't think.
Yeah.
I think that's the problem. You can't just say, we're going to have good culture, and then
no,
there's
take
good
out
culture.
For culture?
Yeah, no. Like, culture is something, to your point, you establish it, and then you look for people that fit it, right? You look for people that are going to buy in to what your beliefs are as an organization, that are going to work in the same manner, maybe not the same exact way, but in the same manner and mindset that the other people are there. Because if you're all rowing in the same direction, it becomes a lot easier to accomplish what those goals are set out. I don't think the Suns knew that as an organization, what they wanted that. And obviously, as a team, they never had a personality, where these other groups that we talked about all had that, either starting from their head coach or starting kind of from the lure of what their franchise was, and the Suns don't have any of that right now. And when you just say, we're going to be a world-class organization, well, good in theory, great soundbite, but it doesn't happen in the first 6 months of a group running it. You have to build it.
All right, we're going to keep having this conversation. We're going to look at some big threes next that maybe didn't pan out the way that everyone had hoped or anticipated for them. But first, I want to remind you guys that sports are more fun when you've got the BetMGM Sportsbook app on your phone. And if you have not signed up for BetMGM yet, now is a great time to sign up, because they are running their Grand Slam jackpot promotion every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday through the MLB season. So it's super simple. It's a weekly bet and get promotion. You just place a $10 or more wager on any player to hit a home run every weekend. Yes, Friday counts on that as well. So Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. If that player hits a Grand Slam on that day, you can win the $50,000 daily prize or a share of the prize with every other winning bettor. So when you sign up for the BetMGM Sportsbook app, make sure you sign up using that promo code PHNX. Then you place your first BetMGM Sportsbook wager through the BetMGM Sportsbook mobile app of at least $10. And you will receive up to $1,500 in bonus bets if the bet loses. So BetMGM, all the great reasons to sign up right now with that code PHNX. You can check out the show notes for full details. And now you can listen to Shane talk about the disclaimer.
Bonus bets expire in 7 days. One new customer offer only. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY, 467-369, New York. Call 1-800-327-5050, Massachusetts. 21 plus only. Please gamble responsibly. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP, Arizona. 1-800-BETS-OFF, Iowa. 1-800-981-0023, Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Bonus bets are non-withdrawable. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in New York, Nevada, North Carolina, Ontario, or Puerto Rico.
Get stuffed on terror, and it's time to tell some other people to get stuff, because it's time to throw some shade. No. Brought to you by our friends over at Shady Rays. Eric, do you have that picture that I sent over to you? You don't? Well, then I'm not going to use it. I'm throwing shade at Eric to start off for not having the image I sent. But today I was on the internet, as we all do while we're working, because we like to procrastinate, and I came across Colin Cowherd talking about J.J. Redick on his podcast today, and he started hating on him because he was wearing a hat backwards and said that he's an NBA head coaching candidate and you can't lead if you wear a hat backwards, which is the dumbest shit I've ever heard. Hey, Colin, I'm the vice president of content around here. I'm gonna wear my goddamn hat backwards if I want to, because there is no litmus test to being a good leader or any of this crap, and it's not a backwards hat in any way that dictates it. Just because you want to wear your collared shirts and act like a highfalutin upper one percenter while you're talking about sports doesn't mean the rest of us have to. And that's throwing shade, brought to you by our friends over at Shady Rays. Get ready for the season ahead with quality shades built to last. Our friends at Shady Rays have you covered with premium polarized shades that won't break the bank. Shady Rays is an independent sunglass company offering a world-class product rated 5 stars by over 300,000 people. That's gone up by like 50,000 people since the last time we had a Shady Rays ad. That's how damn good they are. Their shades have durable frames and crystal clear optics, making them the perfect choice for all outdoor activities. Plus, if your shades ever go missing or take an unexpected hit, don't sweat it. They have the most insane protection in all of eyewear. Every pair is backed by their lost or broken replacement guarantee. And if you don't love your shades, which you will, but if on the off chance you don't, you can exchange them for a new pair or return them worry-free in 30 days, no questions asked. Exclusively for our listeners, Shady Rays is giving out our best deal of the season. Head to ShadyRays.com and use promo code PHNX for 35% off polarized sunglasses. Try for yourself the shades rated 5 stars by over 300,000 people. And Colin Cowherd, yeah, I'm wearing my shades inside and my hat backwards. Back to you, Lindsay.
Oh, thank you. Thank
highfalutin.
I know, right?
He lost all street cred when he said that.
All the shade. All right, guys, let's talk about some big threes that did not pan out the way that people had hoped it would. And we're going to look at the 2013-2014 Brooklyn Nets first. This big three, we got Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Deron Williams. In their first season together, their record was 44-38. They finished 6th in the East, and they lost in the second round. Gerald, you mentioned the age of KJ and Paul Pierce when we were talking about them with the Boston Celtics back in 2007 and 2008.
Yeah.
This is a couple years later.
This was indeed.
Age probably played a huge factor in this one.
Oh, it did.
Yeah, D. Will was 29, KG was 37, and Paul Pierce was 36.
Yeah.
And on top of that, like we've been talking about, what you have to give up. You gave up a bunch of players: Chris Humphries, Gerald Wallace, Chris Joseph, Marshawn Brooks, Keith Bogan, for KG, and Paul Pierce and Jason Terry, who was also older than dirt at that point. But you also gave up 3 first-round picks, 2 of which turned into Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown.
Mm.
So that really hurts when you have a very limited window, but you also gave up a bunch of picks that turned into really good players.
I still think they gave up less than the Suns gave up for KD in that. If you look at
they did.
The list of those players.
They did. But this was crazy that they gave up this much for KG at 37 and Paul Pierce at 36.
Well, but that was new owner syndrome. That was Mikhail Prokhorov, who had just taken over that team with deep pockets and wanted to make a big splash, because wasn't this their first year in Brooklyn or one of the first years in Brooklyn? So he had a new building, a new branding. He wanted to make a big splash, so he went in on this. And they still had Joe Johnson as part of that group, too. So, like, I don't know. I know the age is a little different. This one feels a little too familiar.
We need to provide context on this right away, because people are going to compare this Nets trade to what we did. What we did, what Kevin Durant is doing at this age and what he was doing when we traded for him, 9-day difference compared to what KG and Pierce were doing at the time. Also, like, they brought in Beal in a separate trade, and Beal is a lot younger than these guys, I think 30 when they brought him in. So we do need to provide that context, because I don't want people comparing what the Suns did to what the Nets did.
No, I'm thinking solely in the reason it came together. In the new owner wanting to make a splash, trying to figure some things out.
I don't love
out,
that connection, you know. To be honest,
I mean,
with you.
Granted, he's, you know, Ishbia isn't a Russian oligarch, so I feel a little bit better about that, you know, as part of it. But to your point, younger, a Kevin Durant much better than KG is at this point. But I mean, there's still depth on this roster. Brooke Lopez, Joe Johnson is there. There's Mason Plumlee. I mean, not great, but Mirza Teletovic. Like, there were guys on this roster that made it a little bit deeper than Phoenix, too. So, yeah, a little different, but I hope their trajectory is not similar.
They did make it deeper, but they made it deeper in the East. With, like, if they'd have played that Timberwolves team, they would have lost in 3. Like, it would have been different.
Their second season together, and we put together in quotes, because no Paul Pierce. RIP to the Brooklyn Nets Big Three 1.0, because yes, we're going to talk about another Big Three. But in the second season, when Paul Pierce left, their record was 38-44. They finished 8th in the East, and they lost in the first round.
Okay, that in and of itself makes me laugh. You finished 38-44, and you were the 8th seed in the East. That tells you how shitty the competition is, which makes that even worse that team couldn't pull off anything.
Pretty bad.
All right, let's look at another one. This one, we're going to do the 2012-2013 Lakers. We've got Steve Nash, Kobe Bryant, and Dwight Howard.
This is also not fair.
They finished with a 45-37 record, 7th in the West. They got swept in the first round.
I mean, Steve Nash was definitely on his last legs in the NBA at that point. Like, so to say that he was like part of the big three, I just feel like it's a little by name only, in my opinion.
Well, they certainly played it up like that. You They did.
But like Steve wasn't, you know, he was barely a shell of the guy that he used to be. And Dwight Howard and Kobe had famous run-ins all the time, and that just never really fit, and that was probably the biggest reason why that didn't work.
Well, yeah, coaching. I mean, there was all, but again,
is that Dale Harris?
No, that was it. Dale at the beginning. I'll look it up, but there were larger issues at play there. You know, which is weird because this is a franchise that very much had the mystique, the aura, what it means to be, you know, a Laker in their favor, but it didn't go down to that level. And part of it is, yeah, you basically put together a powder keg with Dwight and Kobe, and then Nash was on his last leg dealing with the back, and all that became more prominent and everything. Again, Mike Brown. Thank you. Not quite the same situation here again, but the same, you know, a thought process of, we got Kobe, who we want to make happy and try to reload where he can still win, and it didn't work out though.
Yeah, it's a little different because Nash was 38 at the time, but Kobe was still playing at a high level at 34. Dwight Howard was still only 27. This is where we're starting to get into the modern NBA in terms of you have to give up a lot in order to bring star caliber names to your team. Because even though Nash left in free agency, technically it was a sign and trade that got the Suns two first rounders and another first that wound up trading it to Philly and then trading it back. And that became Mikal Bridges. So you do have to give up some picks there for Nash, and they gave up a ton to get Howard.
What happened with those other two picks?
Kendall Marshall was one.
We don't want to talk about those.
Was it Kendall Marshall? And who was the
not now,
one?
Saul. Not now.
Who was 2014 or 15?
Archie Goodwin? Wasn't it Archie Goodwin was the other one?
I'd have to check into who those were, but they were not mainstays. We can say that. Just looking at that time period of our lives, we can confidently say they were not mainstays here in the Valley for very long. But yeah, again, like this team, the Nets team from before, 19th in defensive rating. This Lakers team, 21st in defensive rating. And Nash missed a huge chunk of the season dealing with those back problems. So again, we keep coming back to injuries, availability, what you had to give up, defense, a lot of these same recurring themes.
Yeah, but when you look at this group, there was no bench here either.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one thing they had in common. Not a lot of depth, so you couldn't overcome any kind of injury in that way, especially to your starting point guard. It was not a great roster. Well, you're looking
we had a Drew Eubanks. They had a Devin Eubanks.
Yes, they did.
So that's cool.
In their second season, quote unquote, together, Dwight Howard was gone. And they finished with a 27-55 record, 14th in the West, and they missed the playoffs.
Oof. So a couple things.
Didn't
bring this up with the Nets, but it happened with the Nets. It happened with the Lakers. They changed coaches between those two seasons too, which surely, based on what we're looking at, seems like a panic move in some cases where you have to try to do it, but doesn't necessarily pay dividends.
But they promoted from within because D'Antonio was on that staff the year before, and he became the head coach and ran that into the ground.
So you're saying David Fizdale come on down for a 30-win season?
If you want Fizzy.
So the final big three we're going to look at here is the 2020-2021 Brooklyn Nets of Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving. Their first season together, they had a record of 44-24, finished second in the East, and then they lost in the second round.
Again, the availability on that one's a little sus when we say 44-24.
Yeah.
I think that those three combined played, 17, 18 games combined in the entire time in Brooklyn?
Yeah,
it was less than 20. Because I remember when we hit our 20 game mark, everybody was like, they already played more games than Kyrie, Harden, and KD did. So,
we did it.
Yeah.
Yay, look at us.
That was just a
there was a lot of issues around that.
It was a shitstorm from the start. Yeah. Like, it was all it was never going to work. Like you had, not only did you have them going through the middle of the pandemic and the issues that came about with that, but also you had guys on different pages. You had guys that were injured all the time. You had, I think KD was coming off of his Achilles injury for that first year. So Kyrie and Harden were kind of trying to play together, and then Harden got hurt the other time. It was just all over the place. It just never looked like it was going to fit.
It was, and yet they took the eventual champs to a game seven, and they could have won that game if not for KD's shoe on the line.
But who didn't play?
Kyrie didn't play.
Harden got hurt and played with a bad hamstring for most of that series.
Right.
So, it was basically KD, Joe Harris, and a bunch of scrubs, and damn near beat the Bucks by themselves.
I get what you're saying, because we keep coming back to this. Like, if your big three's not healthy, if they're not available, you're not going to do shit. Like, you're just not going to get to where you want to go. And I think that was still the biggest thing that held us back this season, as much as we're going to focus on bench depth and coaching and all these other things. Like, if your big three doesn't stay healthy for 60, 70, 75 games, you're not going to get where you want to go.
Or you can choose to look at it a different way, just because you want slander, is that, well, you know, hey, they were never on the court and they still got to the Eastern Conference Finals.
It was the semifinals. They lost to the Bucks
because they
played. They played Atlanta in the Eastern Conference.
It was kind of like us with Denver last year. I think whoever wins that second round series is automatically going to the NBA Finals.
It was Trae Young's weird. Yeah. Take the Hawks to the we thought, oh crap, could this wind up being a Suns Hawks NBA Finals?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So that was the
Ben Simmons forgot how to shoot layups in that series.
Yep. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Oh.
A lot of things happened for that to happen.
In their second season, quote unquote, together. They did play majority of the season together, all three of them, but then you had James Harden traded at the deadline. And in this season, they had a 44-38 record. They finished seventh in the East and lost in the first round. Mm. So I think from a historical perspective, when the big threes don't pan out very well in their first season together, changes usually are made capacity.
Like Ben Simmons, this was the season that Kyrie Irving forgot to get a shot.
So. Yes, yeah. That is true.
It is absolutely true. Again, those three only played 17 games together in 2 years. Like, they were never on the court together. And so, when you don't have all three of your guys that you're expecting, especially all three of them that were, I want to say their ages were still pretty solid, around either the 30 mark or less. Mm-hmm. You got to perform at a high level, and they just were never able to get on the court.
Can I just say this? None of this made me feel any better, if that was what we were hoping to go for here. Well, because, okay, you don't have a lot in common with the teams that won championships, right? You have some things in common with the teams that kind of flamed out, but I feel like you might be in your own particular subset of this that we're going to get into the hand things that handcuff them, but I think this could, if people are doing this 5-10 years from now, I think they could be looking at this as one of the more disappointing three to come together based on situation surrounding it as well.
So we're definitely going to discuss real quickly how the Suns can kind of learn from these teams and what maybe the future could look like for us based around all the CBA rules and regulations. But hopefully our inner circle will be really good next year when it comes to the Suns, and we won't be let down.
We're not done with this topic.
In year two.
I have more to say.
We're not done with this topic. There is so much more to say. Like I just said, we're going to talk about it. But I do want to remind you guys that our friends over at Circle K did create a brand new free membership program where you can get hooked up and save even more money. First and foremost, you save 25 cents per gallon on your first 5 fill-ups. You save 3 cents per gallon every single day. That can get bumped up even more depending on how often you use the app and your inner circle kind of status, if you will. And also, right now, Circle K has a member exclusive beverage deal going on. Inner Circle members can get any size Polar Pop or Froster for just 69 cents now through September 3rd. Perfect timing for this crazy hot summer weather that we are about to have to endure. To find that offer, you can just check out the app under Inner Circle and offer. So join Inner Circle for free by downloading the Circle K app today. Terms and conditions apply at participating locations. Visit CircleK.com for details.
I so need a beer.
Yeah. I'm
thinking about all this.
You can get some at Circle K too.
I know. I got to go get a Four Peaks.
There you go.
Maybe I'll stop at Circle K or I'll stop at the A Street Pub on my way home. I will wait to get home to drink them. Let me make that clear.
Smart, 100%. Smart.
Yeah, that's exactly the way you need to do it. But I need one. And I think I might go with the Bad Birdie Juicy Golden Ale. I had an opportunity to try one not too long ago while I was out at the A Street Pub. Love it. As they say, it's super drinkable. And I can confirm the reports. It is, in fact, super drinkable. I really enjoy it. But they've got great beers across the board. I love the Wow Wheat. That's one of my favorites. They're 100%. I love the Cool Beans as well. It's a vanilla porter that I love a lot. So I'm just a big fan of what Four Peaks brings to the table. But if you don't drink or you're not old enough to, you're not 21 yet, don't worry. They got great food at the 8th Street Pub as well. The chicken tendies, as the youngins around here call them, are spectacular. I love their pizzas, but you can get a little bit of everything out there at the 8th Street Pub. So make sure to stop there. And if you want to find where you can get great beer from Four Peaks, you can go to fourpeaks.com/locator to find all your favorite beers and events. Plus, check out at Four Peaks Brew or at Four Peaks Pub to keep up with the latest at Arizona's hometown brewery. Must be 21 or older to drink Four Peaks, and please drink responsibly.
All right, gentlemen, is there anything the Suns can learn from these teams that we've talked about today?
All hope is lost.
Stop.
I mean, history is not on our side.
Well, I'll say this. I think, you know, when you're looking at the Suns, where they're at right now and what some of these teams have done, some of them didn't do, I do think you need a nice little balance of youth and age and experience. I think that's the thing that if the Suns don't win a championship with this group, I think they're going to look back at some of the things that they kind of fumbled down the stretch of the last two or three seasons, and like getting rid of quality assets or missing on draft picks or not taking the draft seriously, or even in trading for guys that might be a little bit younger but also solid to contribute to the bottom line. And I think that's what they're ultimately going to look back, because it's all well and good that you want to get a whole veteran-led team. But we saw that didn't work for shit this year. All the veterans, sometimes they say, you know, like you can't teach a dog new tricks. That's absolutely what it felt like this year. It felt like we had 12 individuals that all had their own mind made up of how they were going to play basketball, and it never really ever synced up. And you got to figure that part out. And when you have young players like a Tumani Kamara, who we traded away, you know, who's ready to be coached, who has that young exuberance to play at a high level, and you saw him do that at Portland, that would have been a nice, you know, keep had they been able to hold on to him, amongst other draft picks that we missed on in the past. So that's where I think ultimately it's going to come down to me, the front office. Like the front office's decisions in terms of how they construct this roster or how they constructed this roster are really going to, you know, matter as they move forward. What are you going to be able to do in terms of flexibility? How are you going to infuse a little bit of youth and athleticism into this team? Because that was probably one of the more glaring things watching them play against the Timberwolves is, you know, Jaden McDaniels was a problem. His length and his youth were just an issue. You know, Edwards, you're going to have to face him every damn year now, like, because he's super young. So what are you going to do to combat that? I don't know if they have an answer for it.
Yeah, I look at it and, you know, like we talked about, age took down some of these teams. I don't think the Suns have that as much to worry about as some of the other big threes that failed. But leadership and, you know, and health are two things that if they don't get that next year, I don't think they're going to have much of a chance to take that next step. And how do you get that leadership? It's a big question, but looking at this, I'm a little more hesitant to fire Frank Vogel just to fire Frank Vogel at this point, unless, like we talked about, you know that you have a championship pedigree coach that can come in. And I'm not just talking guy who won championship. I'm talking guy with a winner mentality, guy that can bring some semblance of culture and structure to this group that they lacked this year, you know, and they're all, it's big question marks because health is going to be tough with this group. You just had Kevin Durant go through an unbelievably healthy season. Do you think you're going to get that in year two? I don't know. I mean,
he did say it's because nobody hurt him. Yeah, that was the reason why he was able to be healthy this year, was because nobody else harmed him.
Yeah, well, let's be fair. He harmed himself when he was warming up the year before that took him out. That's like, true. That wasn't anybody else.
Yeah, it does. Like, why doesn't that count?
That feels like it was only 10 games.
Yeah.
That's not that. I mean, if he plays 72,
that's
fucking good.
But to me, it's like, okay, you are rolling dice. That's the one guy that's, what, 36 in next season? And so you are rolling the dice there with age and health. But it's going to be a crapshoot. I know we're going to go over the limitations of what they can add, but you got to pull a rabbit out of your hat and find a bench too. You need some depth to be able to do this as well.
Last thing I'll say before we move on to those limitations, I know history can be instructive, but honestly, I don't feel any better or worse looking at these, because if you look at the common characteristics between the big threes that worked and the ones that didn't work, the Suns are kind of smack dab in the middle of those in terms of looking at ages, looking at where their defense ranked compared to these other teams. I think the big concerns are obviously a lack of resources to continue bringing in young talent, or a lack of interest in using those resources to bring in young talent. And to your point, like leadership, that has to be better next year. But for me, it's like I'm looking at these teams, and a lot of the teams, the big threes that didn't work, availability was their biggest issue. That was a big issue for the Suns, but they were nowhere near as underwhelming in their first season together as a lot of these big threes were that didn't work out. So that's kind of my one encouraging thing, is like, yes, they have things to improve. They have things to correct. They have things internally that need to be better in year two. But they were not the depressing travesty that they've been made out to be over the last few weeks, especially compared to some of these teams that we're looking at, like those Nets or Lakers teams that put a big three together. Like, I think they're smack dab in the middle, and you could argue they'll go either way, but I do think they have things that they can build on in year two.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I struggle with that thought though, because I agree in theory, the destination, when you look at it, 49 wins, you know, you consider everything, but the journey felt like it was so littered with potholes that maybe that 49 wins and all that, when you look at it in totality, makes it feel a little bit better than it was at times. Like,
I feel the reverse. I feel like, with as toxic as our discourse around this team was, the fact that they won 49 games feels kind of unbelievable to me. Like they were still almost a top 10 defense despite only getting 41 games from their three best players. Like, we can talk to how uneven the journey felt, and it did. It felt very disjointed, but it's because their roster was so disjointed in terms of who they had on a nightly basis. Like, that's a hard thing to overcome.
The one last thing I will note is Maurice in the chat said, all I ever heard growing up was younger players give the older players energy.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think that is something that the Suns could definitely use, some youth to reinvigorate and to, you know, kind of what Flex was talking about yesterday in terms of how he was speaking about campaign, having that, like, I'm playing for my basketball life here. Enthusiasm. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I feel like when you're younger, a little bit newer in the NBA, you have that same kind of, like you said, Espo, enthusiasm around
things.
When
you're watching this team this year, it just felt like it was a chore. Mm-hmm. It felt like it was a chore. It felt like every game was a chore. It was like they were just trying to figure it out. They were just trying to get from A to Z. And and every game was a little bit different. They were just, it was a grind. It was a grind. And when you're playing basketball like that, honestly, any sport like that, when it just does not feel like everything is clicking and you're just grinding to get through it, it can sap the energy out of you so fast. And that's what it felt like watching this team. And that's what it felt like for us watching them. Like them experiencing it is one thing. Us watching it was another thing. Like, how do you fix that? Like, yeah, the youth is one way to do it. But they also, like, it wasn't even just about youth. Like, they got rid of campaign. Like, this is the thing that I keep going back to. It's like, there's just some questionable moves that were made, and it felt like they didn't really have much thought behind them. Getting rid of campaign when they did didn't really make much sense, because they didn't have a guard. They didn't have a point guard, and they were going to go. They were all in on the point book stuff or point Beal both ways. Cool, but like
I think they might have thought Jordan Goodwin would have been a little bit better than.
I get that, but you already had somebody that's proved that they can handle that to some degree. And you know, hell, you kept other players on the roster that had no business being on the roster. You might as well have just kept campaign. Like again, it's hindsight's 20/20, but there was just moves that I feel like consistently come back to bite this team in the butt. That they've made over the course of the last year. I will say this, I have shifted a little bit on the Frank Vogel stuff to a certain degree, not completely. I still feel like you have to have ownership and you have to have a handle on what is going on with your team and your organization to some degree, right? But I also do, I'm starting to veer a little bit towards the front office and what they have been doing, and namely James Jones has done in the last couple years to set this team up for success or lack thereof. And there's been some questionable moves that have happened that I don't know if I necessarily agree with. And at the time, you're kind of like, okay, well, you know, let's see what happens. And then if it doesn't work out, then it doesn't work out. And I feel like there's been a couple of those.
All right. Well, the Suns are going to have to get real creative this offseason because there's a lot of red tape, if you will, around them and what they can do. But before we dive into all of that, I do want to remind you that our friends over at Illegal Pete's have a sound check deal that is going on right now. Illegal Pete's is here to bring a win to you with their legendary sound check deal. So all you got to do is bring in your ticket stub from any ticketed event, and you're going to get a draft beer or house margarita for just a penny. Illegal Pete's wants to celebrate with you, whether it's a pregame or a postgame party. They've got you covered on all your game day needs. Now, you must purchase an adult entree to redeem Illegal Pete's sound check deal, but you will definitely love all the food options that Illegal Pete's has. We're talking bowls, tacos, salads, burritos, nachos, so much more, and it's all pretty customizable, so that's even better. You always know you're going to get something that you actually really enjoy when you go to Illegal Pete's. Plus, they've got a full bar with custom cocktails and beers. So check them out down in Tempe. Illegal Pete's is your go-to spot for burritos, buddies, and beer.
I'm just going to say it. If James Jones wants to bring everybody back and run it back next year, he's high. And if you want to get high, our friends over at OG's can take care of you. They've launched two new products made with
lime. Get high, it's Enhancer Life.
Okay, same difference.
James Jones is just trying to enhance his life.
That's it, man.
OG's has launched two new products made with live rosin and RSO, that good Rick Simpson oil. The OG's Naturals and the Big OG's. OG's Naturals are vegan gummies made with live rosin, available in the amazing sweet clementine flavor, one of my favorites there. Meanwhile, the Big OG's is a gummy in a mega version of Peg's Raspberry Orange RSO, one of the company's most popular products, and I'll tell you why. Because it's a giant gummy that is 100 milligrams of THC and sliced into 10 slices for 10 milligrams a piece. It's spectacular. So learn more about OG's gummies and where you can find them. Head over to OG'sbrands.com. Must be 21 or over to enjoy. And please enjoy responsibly when enhancing your life.
All right, everybody. Class is in session. We wrote things down this time so that if you're a visual learner, it'll help it stick. Because I can tell you based on my social, which is not even near the level of yours, Gerald, that people are still a little confused by this, which is, I get it. There's a lot to it. Mm-hmm. So let's look at some of the limitations the Suns are up against.
Yeah. So,
cool, buddy.
So looking ahead to this upcoming summer, because the Suns are a second tax apron team as of when their season ended, these are the limitations in place against them. They cannot aggregate multiple players in a trade, which means they can't combine two outgoing players to match the salary of a different player. They can send out one player and receive multiple players in return, but they cannot send multiple players out combined as part of any trade. They can't take on additional money in any trade. The rule is usually you get up to 110% of the salary you are bringing back. Now the Suns cannot take on an additional dollar compared to what they're sending out. So it has to be 100% of what they're sending out or less in any trade. They cannot use the pre-existing trade exceptions. If they make a trade and create a trade exception, they will be able to use that in the future, but they cannot use, for example, the campaign trade exception that they made last summer. They cannot use the mid-level exception or any of those other exceptions like the biannual, the room exception, those types of things to sign free agents. So that basically restricts them to just vet minimums in free agency that they can offer guys because they are already over the cap. They cannot acquire any player in a sign and trade. They cannot sign players on the buyout market if that player's salary before being bought out was greater than the mid-level exception. So a lot of tools are no longer at their disposal that usually teams in this tier of spending can use to improve their roster. They're basically limited to very strict trade regulations where they're mostly doing one-for-one deals. We're trading one guy to bring in multiple players. And free agency, it's vet minimums.
So let me explain this. I'll encapsulate it in one way, basically the Cliff Notes version of what Joe just said. You're screwed while building a roster at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you just got to get creative.
You have to get very creative.
You got to get creative. And this is also why things like the Grayson Allen signing and, you know, we'll talk about Royce O'Neal getting signed hopefully in the near future are so valuable for this team because you can actually offer them a little bit more money where a lot of other guys you cannot. We'll get into that tomorrow, the Grayson and Royce thing.
It's also why, like, when people are out there on Twitter like, oh, get rid of Royce and get rid of this and get rid of that, okay, what are you going to get to replace it? Because you have no way. You have to go back to the vet minimum guys, like that's your only pool to play with right now if you're going to try and go into free agency. So you are absolutely, your hands are tied. Yeah. Like you have no options. Like you have to take care of what you have right now, and you got to hope that you're able to, you know, either move a asset in order to get one or two back that are going to help you, or you got to pray that you hit it again, you know, or that you hit it in the free agent market at the vet minimum level, because other than that, you have no options. Mm-hmm. You have zero options.
So we'll dive in more tomorrow as far as like where the Suns sit pretty much currently, what their options are around the players who maybe have player options or who are free agents, things of that nature tomorrow. But this just kind of helps paint the picture as to why the big three with the Suns is so much harder now because of the CBA rules and limitations. You can't go fill out the rest of your bench and just say, well, I'll just pay a little extra in luxury tax like we've seen in the past teams be able to do. They've basically taken that away from you at this point.
Can we also say a couple other things that were not on the list?
Sure.
A, this is not the NFL. And if you cut a player, you still owe them all their money and you're still on the hook right. for their entire salary. So you can't say, oh, we'll just cut them. You can waive and stretch them to a certain degree, but even that only lasts so long.
And it's not going to get you under that apron. No, so you still that money back. No. You still only have vet mins.
Like, so for instance, like Bradley Beal, like he's making roughly about a little over $50 million a year. If you waived and stretched him for the remaining of his 3 years, you owe him $25+ million a year for the next 6 years, which is still on your books. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like it doesn't work. Like there's no easy option. You can sit there and talk about trading Bradley Beal, but again, you can't package Bradley Beal and picks for, you know, to another organization and get other anything else in return unless it absolutely matches the salary. And Bradley Beal's value right now is probably not, you know, it's definitely not to the tier of $50 million a year for any organization to take on. So you're kind of stuck with that. There's only two movable parts in terms of like if you want a big splash in return. And that's Book and KD. Those are the only two things that you could possibly move at this point that will get you anything of value in return. And I just doubt the Suns are going to do that at this point. Or then you look at Nurk, and you might look at Grayson, or you might look at Royce if he re-signs. Those three. And then you have Nasir Little, who has a little bit of money on his value. So those are the assets that you have to play with. Do you trade any of those? And if you do, what are you really going to get back in return? Because obviously it's going to be more of a, we just want to change this player around and see if we can find something else that's going to benefit us. And that's just, it's a hard game to play right now.
If they're keeping the big three, I think they look at, can we get anything for Nurk to provide some more depth? But I don't know that that changes anything. I think people have to lock in for the real possibility that this team's going to take calls on Kevin Durant this summer. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean they're going to make a move, but I think they'll listen because they have so few
options
that I think that you're at least going to have to entertain it because are you hoping the 22nd pick in the draft changes your fate? Maybe if you get lucky, but we've seen this front office draft and it's okay at best, I think, you know, especially when you look at players that they didn't take that were available to them at spots. Like, your hope is that 22nd pick becomes a massive contributor, or you hit a lottery ticket in these vet minimums that didn't happen last offseason. And unless some player truly surprises you and decides, I'm going to leave a lot of money on the table.
LeBron James.
I mean, holy hell. your path is...
Speaking into existence.
Yeah, you're trying to thread the needle in a pretty impressive way, in ways that I don't even think vintage Steve Nash could do.
That's also the baffling thing, is like, when you do hear stuff like that, let's just say LeBron did say, you know what, I'm going to sacrifice the $50+ million that I can get from the Lakers. I don't want it. I want to go play in Phoenix, right? Mm-hmm. You're still going to have a portion of this fan base is like, why? This is terrible, blah, blah, blah. What are your other options?
People love to hate LeBron.
My God.
It's as simple as that.
They would get clowned so much by the national media for being this superstar team that can't put it together. And it's like, well, what else do we do then?
Yeah.
Are we supposed to live in a world where getting LeBron James on a vet minimum would be a bad thing?
Yeah, sorry. No. But if LeBron James picks up the phone to James Jones and goes, I want to play for $3 million, you go, how fast can I get the contract to you?
Yeah.
You want me to FedEx it? You want me to drive 300 miles?
What else do you want on the low?
Yeah. Like, and
again,
also,
like I said last week, if you got to cheat, you cheat. I don't even care at this point. I don't even care at this point. I didn't say it that aggressively last week, but I'm at that point. I don't care.
Yeah. Don't listen to her, Matt Ishmael.
Listen to her if it gets you a title.
Listen, y'all were just talking about dying yesterday and wanting a championship. I'm trying to do whatever I can do to get it for you, okay? I
mean, by the way, to those that are like, oh, they'll trade Grayson, you can't till, December?
Can. October.
Mid-October. So not this offseason.
Right.
You ain't dealing them this offseason, so put that away.
More than likely, you're looking at draft day, you're dangling that number 22 pick and like either Nurk or Nasir or somebody's contract to bring in one or two pieces, or you're looking at trading that 2031 pick because that does become trade eligible on draft night, also dangling it with a salary that you have. I don't think we're going to get any blockbuster type move. I could be wrong, but you're probably looking at trying to marginally improve.
We'll dive into this a little bit more tomorrow and paint the picture for you guys. But I like how Connor said I'm onto something with the cheating. I'm just saying.
Listen.
I'm doing everything. Espo sold his soul and it didn't work. So it now it's my turn to try and figure out a way to bring a championship to all of you lovely people. Doing the best I can.
I mean, okay? I grew up Catholic, so I already knew my soul was pretty tarnished.
Oh,
so.
Boy.
Not a huge value to it.
Oh, right. And on that note, thank you all for joining us. We appreciate you being here. Hit that thumbs up button on your way out. Rate, review, and subscribe if you are listening wherever you get your podcasts. You can give the show a follow on social at @PHNX_Suns. You can follow me at @LindsaySmithAZ. You can follow Saul at @Saul_Bookman. You can follow Gerald at @GeraldBorgay. And of course, you can follow Espo at Espo. Espo, take us home.
LeBron, the fourth level of the parking garage at Terminal 4, has a Bentley with $150 million in the trunk. Enjoy. Ahoy, hoy.